Houston, greetings, everyone. It's 8 p.m. Sunday evening and time for another Truth Provided broadcast. This is Nicholas from Presence of God Ministry. The website is www.remnantofgod.org. This broadcast is going throughout the nation each Sunday evening on both AM and FM radio frequencies as well as micro-broadcasters across America. It's also being broadcast across the globe on both satellite and internet radio. If you plan to use satellite radio, we can be found on Galaxy 13, Transponder 16, 7, and Audio 7.70. If you want to listen online, you can go to FirstAmendmentRadio.com and click the Listen button on the left side of the screen. If you need any additional information as to what AM and FM frequencies to tune into in your area or other internet radio broadcasters that, you know, carry the show, please stop by my website at remnantofgod.org and click the antique radios that you see on the main page. The new call-in phone number for today, I'm thinking this is the right one. It's 559-781-3553 if you want to call in at the second half of the show. If you'd like to join us in our privately owned and operated chat rooms on the website, just click the silver microphone on the main page of the site and follow the prompts to the public room. You can share any comments or questions you have with me there live or just, you know, chat with the folks that are in there when they arrive. We also hold live online church services as well each Sabbath. Starting at about noon Central Time on Saturdays. If you are, if you already have a church, stop by Friday nights for a Sabbath fellowship. So we usually start around 8 p.m. on Friday. And by the way, the audio chat room—I mean, that is an audio chat room. It has text and audio capabilities. So make sure that you get your speakers turned on, some because some people do in fact use their microphones. You don't have to; you can just use text if you like. And it's brand new. We just upgraded it too, so there's a lot of neat little features that are tacked onto it. So anyway, let's get right to it. In just 2 days' time, the United States will know who it is that will be the president for the next 4 years. Does it really matter, I ask? Well, not if you have done any research into the Bilderberg Group. No matter which man wins, the Bilderbergers will guide his every move anyway. So what I'm more concerned with is, are we as Christians ready for what Satan's men in office are directed to do? Prophecy will be fulfilled whether we want to believe it or not. All we can do is get our houses in order. We need to draw nigh unto Christ more now than ever before. Just recently, I received an email from a dear friend in the ministry. And by the way, I want to thank all of you that for your many emails on current events. I also want to thank you for the emails regarding this broadcast, the Truth Provided broadcast. I find them very helpful, and I would like to ask you never to stop. If you come across articles that you feel is important, please don't hesitate to send them to me. I mean, I don't care if you think I've already gotten them, because sometimes I don't, you know, and some, you know, these little articles sometimes pop up that are, you know, very important. I like them, and we can use them. If it's worth mentioning, rest assured I will share it with many. For those of you looking for a ministry to start, for example, or work for the Lord, why not be a current events researcher, you know, for preachers like myself or that like to take current events and match them with prophetic events? It's exciting work, and at the same time, it blesses your faith in the Lord's truth, especially in regards to his prophecy. When you see this stuff happening right in front of you, it makes your faith in the Lord that much stronger. And in so doing, your evangelistic methods become finely tuned and ready for action. So as I was saying, a dear friend of the ministry sent me an email with a link to the Vatican's website. On the page, they have something about the Year of the Eucharist. In Rome, they're celebrating the Year of the Eucharist from October 2004 to October 2005. For those that are unaware, the Eucharist is this idol wafer of Rome that the Vatican proclaims as the actual body and blood of Jesus Christ, our Lord. And they actually worship this wafer. They parade it before the people seeking mass adoration. And during the Dark Ages, they killed millions upon millions that refused to bow to it in worship. On my transubstantiation exposed page in the RCC doctrine section of the menu, I go into far greater detail as to how demonic this doctrine of Rome actually is. Suffice it to say, this wafer will gain a new popularity in the days ahead. Already, there are Protestant churches calling their communion bread a Eucharist. Sadly, this includes the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist churches as well. I expect in the near future this little round wafer to be the cause of much persecution and death. And notice, if you will, this wafer, like most pagan wafers, has a round shape like the sun. It's shaped like the sun. It has a series of small flames circling around the outer rim to symbolize Baal worship, because, you know, the fire with, you know, Molech or Baal, whatever. I've got pictures of this in my next newsletter, by the way. It has the IHS symbol on it in the exact same manner the ancient pagans etched it on theirs. The initials actually stand for Isis, Horus, and Seb. Those are three pagan deities that seek worship. And then also notice, in most Roman Catholic churches, you'll find a crucifix in the middle of the wafer. We're still on the front of the wafer. It has a dead Jesus on it, so as to proclaim Rome's so-called victory at Calvary. The rays of the sun, God Baal, in a luminescent manner, shine from behind the dead body of Christ on that crucifix, as well as it's a sign that Baal's in control here. You know, that's more or less what it's about. It's overshadowing his death. Looking at the back of the wafer, when you flip it over, most of them you'll just see a lot of the wafers, because I used to be a Eucharistic minister for the Catholic Church, and so I've seen all different types. But most of them all have on the back, or just on the front alone, you know, a plus sign, cross, etched upon it. That's the original symbol for Baal. You can find those symbols all over pagan paintings, etchings, carvings. It's a very popular symbol for the modern-day pagan as well as the Catholic. I mean, look around and you will see it hidden in the strangest places. I mean, have you ever noticed a Catholic priest with those robes, or actually pagan robes, but notice the plus sign, little plus sign that you see on your keyboard up there on the top. It's etched all over his clothing, or the Catholic church that he's preaching in. They'll have carvings in the side of the wall on the outside or on the inside. It's carved in the brickwork. It's also found in round windows with the internal window frame forming the plus sign. And then, of course, the round window symbolizes Baal himself, or that Eucharist. Many churches, both Catholic and Protestant, use this symbol, some more apparent than others. Many like to hide it in plain sight, by the way, as well. And what do we mean by that? Well, for example, the next time you see a cross, an empty one. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to have the crucifix cross. A crucifix is actually where they got the body of Christ on there. But next time you see and they usually don't do this on crucifixes. They usually do this on empty crosses. The cross itself, first of all, it's a pagan symbol that Rome used to glorify Baal by placing their offerings upon it. But notice, if you will, some of the crosses have a circle on them nowadays. Up in the top part, the circle is on the upward part of the cross. And if you notice, pretend for a moment that the circle is the only basis for where that cross should be, and then the bottom part of the cross is just holding it up, so you'll see a plus sign in the middle of that circle. It's just a sneaky way to show it out there in plain sight. You know, symbols are very important to Satan. It allows allegiance to his, or more or less shows allegiance to his lies. It's common knowledge among Satanists and Wiccans alike that if you display a symbol designed by Satan somewhere on your business, you will be blessed by worldly riches. This is why you will see the plus sign symbol of the pagan Eucharist on banks, shopping centers, learning institutions, and even as a focal point of commercials, like the new commercial that HP has out with the printers. And, you know, where those pictures keep on changing into actual events. You know what I'm talking about. It's on the Internet, too. But that's their logo, that plus sign. That sign is the ultimate symbol for open Baal worship. And why do I bring all this up? Well, I'd like to draw your attention to excerpts from paragraphs 7, 8, and 23 of the Vatican's so-called apostolic letter from the Pope regarding the year of the Eucharist that just came out. You're going to notice how this is just another method that will eventually lead to the mark of the beast, or, as we discussed and found out a few weeks ago, Sunday laws. Paragraph number 7. Now, these are just like sections and excerpts from these paragraphs. I do have a link in my next newsletter as to all of the paragraphs if you want to read them all in context. So, anyway, the encyclical Redemptor Hominis, at the beginning of my pontificate, this is how the thing starts out on paragraph 7. It says, the International Eucharistic Congress held that year in Rome also helped to focus attention on this aspect of the Great Jubilee. It is also worth recalling that my apostolic letter, Dies Domini, written in preparation for the Jubilee, invited believers to meditate on Sunday as the day of the risen Lord and the special day of the Church. At that time, I urged everyone to rediscover the celebration of the Eucharist as the heart of Sunday. You recall the document, Dies Domini, that was written and distributed in 1998 during the Monica Lewinsky scandal? It was about 104 pages. It's actually smaller. It's not as many pages. I mean, when the Pope actually did it, he did it in a bigger font. So I think it's down to like 80 pages now. But it's still the same. I got it on the site. The timing was done perfectly because the media was much more interested in what Clinton was doing with young interns in the Oval Office than what the Pope was sending to all the churches regarding Sunday laws. The American people were never told of the contents of that 104-page document until the Sabbath-keeping Christian read it. In that document, the Pope demands that Christians, and now this is from Section 67 of the Dies Domini on July 7, 1998, he says, Christians will naturally strive to ensure that civil legislation respects their duty to keep Sunday holy. Now, just like in the days of old, the Vatican used this wafer to force the people to bow down before them, and soon you will see them use it again, except this time they will add to it a global Sunday law to ensure allegiance is known. You know, back when Rome was in power and the Christian church was in its infancy, Roman soldiers were instructed to go house to house and to ensure that, you know, that the people would bow to Caesar as a god, you know? It's the same thing that the Pope does today. He calls himself Lord God Pope. We went over that a couple of weeks ago as well. But if they didn't have the necessary documentation in the household to prove their allegiance to Caesar, a portable bust of Caesar, of the present Caesar, was brought to the home to allow the family to bow and offer sacrifice to it. If they were Christians and refused, the man of the house was instantly murdered before his loved ones, and the wife and the children were sold into slavery. This resulted in the Christian church fleeing into the catacombs of Rome. That's how it started. This day is once again approaching. Except now, instead of in order to show allegiance to the Roman God called the Pope, you must provide evidence of your allegiance to his laws, specifically the Sunday law. It's kind of be like a declaration or a stipulation or a, I don't know, whatever. It's like another Dies Domini, the day of the Lord is what Dies Domini means in English. Okay, let's continue. Paragraph number 8 says, how could such a program be complete without a commitment to the liturgy, and in particular to the cultivation of Eucharistic life? It is necessary to continue in this direction, and to stress particularly the Sunday Eucharist and the Sunday itself, experienced as a special day of faith, the day of the risen Lord, and a gift of the Spirit, the true weekly Easter. I'm not going to get into Easter right now, because I can go on and on and on about Easter. It is not a Christian holiday by any stretch of the imagination. It was started by the pagans. It's even mentioned in Scripture. I mean, it's a very evil time of the year, but a lot of people, it's been twisted around to make it look like it's the arrival of the death and resurrection of Jesus. But, I mean, if that's the case, then how come every year the date of Easter changes? I mean, didn't Jesus die on a particular day? I mean, but Easter, every year it's a different date. And if you want to know why, ask a pagan or ask a priest. They'll both tell you the same thing. Easter's date changes because it happens to do with the moon. The first full moon of spring, the following Sunday, is Easter. That's pagan. It's, you know, worship of the sun, the moon, the stars. Anyway, here we see the Vatican naming the Eucharist the Sunday Eucharist. Some may not see that as much of a threat, seeing how it's Rome speaking and not their Protestant church. Problem is, as of June 26, 2000, your church may have already been joined up or become a member of the One World Church that Rome created. However, your pastor may not have offered that information to you thus far. You know, truth is, all Protestant churches, including the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, have already been infiltrated and taken over by Rome for quite some time now. Now, finishing up the article, it says, paragraph 23, it says, in a particular way, I ask that every effort be made this year to experience Sunday as the day of the Lord and the day of the church. During this year of grace, priests in their pastoral ministry should be even more attentive to Sunday Mass as a celebration which brings together the entire parish community with the participation of different groups, movements, and associations. Now, will 2005 see a new surge in Sunday laws? I'm not sure. But it sure appears Rome would like it to be. And seeing how Rome has already gotten all the world to wonder after her, it should be a snap to get all the churches to agree with the civil legislation the Pope's Dies Domini mentions. And seeing how all churches, including many Seventh-day Adventists, so-called Sabbath-keeping churches, are already seeing Sunday as the true Sabbath, it should be fairly easy to move forward. You know, what truly amazes me is the people that heard Sabbath keepers like myself proclaiming this day was coming for years are still seeing it as a non-event. That boggles my mind. I mean, just last Thursday, we had the 160th year anniversary of the 2,300-year prophetic fulfillment of Daniel chapter 8. The end times began on October 22, 1844, according to prophetic facts and historic record. I didn't write the Bible, and I certainly didn't write the history books. I'm just going by what the facts show. Anyone with a competent knowledge of prophetic symbolism and historic record can see that plainly. For over 100 years, Sabbath-keeping Christians have been saying Sunday laws are coming, and still no one believes us. It just makes no sense. They said it was a false prophecy back then, and now we see more and more nations around the world enacting Sunday laws. Just like last September 15, 2004, the Slavian people saw their nation enact a Sunday law as well. And now we see Rome re-engaging the same pressure tactics regarding the Eucharist. They did this during the Inquisitions. I have a photo in the next newsletter that I am going to... I've had it on the site for a while now. I'm asking people if they found a better version of this photo, because it's a very prophetic photo, and it needs to be put before the eyes of the people. All right? This photo shows a Roman soldier. I mean, it looks like a Nazi. The guy, he's dressed in Nazi clothing. I mean, you can't mistake. He's got the skull metal cap, right? And all the black clothing and everything like that. But anyway, he's in the picture. They got the guy holding an M16, it looks like. And he's all dressed up in bulletproof clothing with a skull metal cap. And just off to his right, behind him, you've got Cardinal Egan. They're both standing on the steps of the Roman Catholic Cathedral. I believe it's St. Peter's Cathedral in New York City on Easter, this last Easter. So, I mean, some of the quotes, for example, I got here from the Father F.X. Talbot, editor of the American Official Jesuit Magazine, for the U.S. statement in the New York Globe, December 14, 1930, says, "The old Protestant culture is about at the end of its rope. Why can't we make the U.S. Catholic in legislation, Catholic in justice, aims and ideals?" Another quote from Cardinal Bellarmine. He was a famous champion of Romanism, cited by Schumacher on page 76. He says, "Experience teaches that there is no other remedy for the evil but to put heretics, Protestants, to death. For the Romish Church proceeded gradually and tried every remedy. At first she merely excommunicated them. Afterwards she added a fine. Then she banished them, and finally she was constrained to put them to death." From the Western Watchman, it's a Roman Catholic publication that went out back in the 1900s. It's from December 24, 1908, it says, "The Catholic Church has persecuted. When she thinks it is good to use physical force, she will use it. Will the Catholic Church give bond that she will not persecute? The Catholic Church give no bonds for her good behavior." Imagine that, calling it good behavior to burn someone at the stake or boil them in oil. And then lastly, I got a quote from 1935, page 66 of the Catholic World, in October. It says, "Some dwell on the vastly increased tolerance shown in this country now to Catholics and Catholic thugs. It betokens the decay of Protestantism." So, I mean, look around now. The Protestant culture is dead. Now, I know many believe that they will never go along with Rome. It's an evil organization. It molests children. It has admitted to killing over 500 million. It's in the news constantly for all sorts of decadence and perversion. So, why would any pastor, minister, or preacher in his right mind bother with this evil church? Besides the fact that the love of many will grow cold. I mean, besides that fact, and they will no longer endorse sound doctrines anyway, the fact remains that Rome will use force. That picture of a Nazi-looking clad armed officer, armed policeman, a New York City police officer with that Roman Catholic cardinal was taken on the steps of that church. Oh no, it was St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City at the Easter Mass of 2004. That's actually Cardinal Edward Egan. I mean, what a prophetic statement is that picture. The two most powerful satanic entities on earth standing together on the steps of a Roman Catholic cathedral. Talk about intimidation. You know, it's no different than the clothing Rome would give the Christians that were about to burn at the stake. The Roman Catholic Church, I'm saying. Not Rome, pagan Rome, papal Rome did this. They had images on their clothing of people being tortured as well as screaming in horror to cause fear to build in the hearts of the faithful. Sadly, some did accept Rome as the true church to escape such a death. And sadder still are those that denied Christ, only to find Rome lied about their last-minute stay of execution. You know, it's one thing to deny him and get away. Well, in today's world, it's not going to make a difference. Some of the people back then, you know, accepted the Roman way just to get away from getting burned at the stake, and then hopefully later on in life they repented. But in today's world, you're not going to have that choice. Once you make the decision to go along, that's it. The mark of the beast is one time only. You know, once it's done, it's done. But the thing is, Rome lies. They've always lied. And some of the people that denied Christ and accepted Rome as the true church to prevent from being burned at the stake, they were killed anyway to ensure their place in hell. This is recorded in numerous books around the world. I recall one such quote offhand where it stated a Catholic priest coaxed the denial of Christ out of a Christian after days of torture by saying he would spare their life. Instead, the poor soul was strangled. All right? It's just sad. I mean, it's just disgusting. I mean, he figured, well, he stated that it would be better for them to be strangled. If they accept this as the true church, we'll just strangle them, give them a better death, rather than have them burn alive. Now, look around today. How many people do you think that want to speak out against Rome refuse to do so when they see these images, that, like that photograph of that cardinal with that Nazi? You know, what's worse, it is now becoming commonplace to see Christians ridiculed, persecuted, and even killed almost daily. A friend of the ministry sends me magazines from other countries on a regular basis. You don't see this kind of stuff in the U.S. of A. I mean, the media is, we all know about the media, especially folks here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. We know what's being said on 257 and 9, regular channels and all this other stuff, and even on cable TV. You ain't getting the truth. They ain't telling you everything what's going on, especially what's going on in the other countries. These magazines, you know, that the friend sends, they're usually in French or other languages, so she has to translate a lot of it for me. And there's also websites that you can go to. You can just type the stuff in, and it'll translate immediately for you. But the pictures usually say all that's needed. One magazine, for example, it's called Paris Match, had a pictorial of a Muslim mob chasing and beating a Christian man because he came into their town looking for work. And they had a whole spread, a whole mess of different pictures as he's going down the last few legs of his life. The mob is hitting him. He's running and he's crying and he's blood all over his face. And the last picture in the pictorial shows the mob standing over the man on the ground as he's in the fetal position. One of the men in the mob has a machete at least 8 inches inside his body. Another magazine shows an older Christian man laying dead in the street next to his bicycle and groceries. They killed him too because he was a Christian. And they left whatever groceries they didn't want laying there next to him. You know, one nice thing is, I actually have seen two faces so far that I know for a fact are going to be in heaven one day. What a blessing from the Holy Spirit to be martyred like that. In the same French magazine, in what appears to be their May issue of 2001, I don't know, I'm assuming it's May because it's spelled M-A-I. So anyway, May issue of 2001 is a long article on how a new Roman Colosseum has recently been erected for entertainment. They actually have Roman soldiers racing about in chariots. They have a mock wars and battles, and they even have a lovely young woman pictured in the article, tied to two stakes awaiting her death. They got these stakes about 5 feet apart from her, and her arms are up in the air, and they got her like roped to it by the wrists. And right alongside of her is a big old lion waiting to eat her alive. These pictures are found in the big old two-page spread on pages 86 and 87. The picture was made especially large and vivid so as to drive home the entertaining features of watching a Christian live mulling. It was so huge I was unable to scan the picture on my scanner, so I photographed it instead and stuck it on the newsletter. And do you suppose that would be an intimidating method to quench the tongues of Christians in that region of the world? You know, fear tactics work very easily on those that have not the strength to trust in Jesus. Christians that have not made drawing nigh to Christ their number one priority will be easy prey. For such fear tactics as these. We don't have the luxury of time any longer. The enemy is seeking ways to prevent us from buying or anything, from busying ourselves, for example, in God's word. I implore you. don't think you have years to work on this. I'm not predicting any dates, of course, so don't get me wrong. What I'm saying is this. If they are doing these things in other countries right now, that means it's only a breath away from happening in our land. In fact, it's already started in many hidden ways. Some of you are very aware. I mean, need I mention Waco or Randy Weaver? I mean, religious persecution is, no matter what the faith, is allowed now. You know, take, for example, this armored SUV that the U.S. Army plans to use on American soil, if need be. Is this not an intimidating picture? I mean, if I'm looking at it right now. It's in my next newsletter. This thing looks massive. I mean, it looks like a giant Humvee. It's got these... It's just armored. It's bulletproof windows. I mean, the whole nine yards is black and very... It looks Nazi. It just looks like something you'd see Hitler make. It's disgusting. Many Christians will never be ready for such a trial as this, and mainly because their pastors and ministers are not teaching them what they need to hear. They preach celebration and peace and safety each and every sermon. Do you think these pastors are going to be ready? Do you think they will preach prophetic facts? Don't count on it. They have already decided to rather preach prosperity and seek your money instead. I mean, this is why you see such huge churches popping up all over the place with these celebration services that look more like a rock concert mixed with a message from a motivational speaker each week. The present truth is not being preached in these churches. There's a lot of nice little smaller churches, of course, but these are monsters of church. I mean, 3,000 to 5,000 seats? How do you pastor that many people? These pastors are hirelings. They don't care for the flock at all because money is their god. Like Jesus says, they're preachers of filthy lucre. The churches with the 3,000 to 5,000 seating capacities are led by Roman Jesuits or friends of same. You know, all one needs do is get these men behind closed door. Offer them a choice of whether or not they want to keep their cash machine ministry running. You know, I recall when Billy Graham used to preach the Pope was Antichrist. Now he sees him as a godly man worthy of trusting. Look at Jack Van Impe. He used to preach the Pope Antichrist, and now he praises him as a man of God. Were these men approached by Jesuits to let them know if they didn't shut up, their ministries would be shut down? How else do you explain the sudden drastic change in their theological principles or prophetic understanding? You know, a photo of that cardinal in that Nazi-looking cap on church steps says a lot. I got some other stuff to share with you after the break, especially in regards to a very chip that they're planning on implanting in the right arm of people. So stick around, please. Everyone, this is Nicholas from Presence of God Ministry. The website is www.remnantofgod.org. We're talking this week about some of the intimidating methods of the Vatican and how they force their religion on others so as to gain global dominance. We had a couple of photos that we were talking about, like, for example, the photo of the cardinal and that Nazi-looking cop on the church steps, or the murdered Christians in the French pictorials, those magazines, or the line and the girl on that the two-page spread and the armored SUV. They're all designed to be a show of force to those of us that preach this truth. They know the masses won't catch the prophetic utterances in those images. They're only concerned with that remnant that is vocal enough to keep on preaching. They want us to clam up. I mean, why else would I be offered $6 million to shut my ministry down back in May of 1999? That offer also proves if they can't scare some people into submission, they're going to figure out ways that they can buy them off. And with that in mind, how much money did Rome give Graham and Van Impe? Who knows? Who cares? Fact is, we all know Rome is one to offer hush money, so it's not like we have to think hard on that assumption. I mean, you know, the molestation scandal proved that nicely. And by the way, you parents that took the money to keep quiet about the priest that raped your son, was it worth it? Okay, so what's next? The remnant people aren't shutting up. The prophecies are being fulfilled. The people are beginning to figure out what's up concerning the real mark of the beast. So what can Rome do to sidetrack the masses? Headline: FDA approves computer chip for humans. The Associated Press reporting back on October 13, 2004, Washington. Medical milestone or privacy invasion. A tiny computer chip approved Wednesday for implantation in a patient's arm can speed up vital information about a patient's medical history to doctors and hospitals. But critics warned that it could open new ways to imperil the confidentiality of medical records. The Food and Drug Administration said Wednesday that Applied Digital Solutions of Delray Beach, Florida, could market the very chip, an implantable computer chip about the size of a grain of rice, for medical purposes. With the pinch of a syringe, the microchip is inserted under the skin in a procedure that takes less than 20 minutes and leaves no stitches. Silently and invisibly, the dormant chip stores a code that releases patient-specific information when a scanner passes over it. The microchips have already been implanted in 1 million pets. I do believe it's in livestock, too. I live out here in a farm area, and some of the farmers talk about this stuff. But the chips, the article continues to say, but the chip's possible dual use for tracking people's movements, as well as speeding delivery of their medical information to emergency rooms, has raised alarm. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services on Wednesday announced a $139 million grant to help make real President Bush's push for electronic health records for most Americans within a decade. To kickstart this chip, this chip's use among humans, Applied Digital will provide $650 million worth of scanners for free at 200 of the nation's trauma centers. Because the very chip is invisible, it's also unclear how healthcare workers would know which unconscious patients to scan. Company officials say if the chip use becomes a routine, scanning triceps for hidden chips would become second nature at hospitals. So far, just 1,000 people across the globe have had the devices implanted, very few of them in the United States. Meanwhile, the chip has been used for pure whimsy, like club hoppers in Barcelona, Spain, now use the microchip to enter VIP areas and through links to a different database, speed payment, much like a smart card. I got the whole article. You can just click I got a link on my next newsletter where you can just click to the entire article. So, is the very chip the mark of the beast? Of course not. Anyone with an understanding of basic prophetic symbolism knows that, but the masses have been talking about computer chips and barcodes being the mark for as long as I have been on the street preaching, and now the technology is here. Many will ignore what Rome is doing because they will focus on this very chip instead. That's what they think it is. Still, complacency has been the norm so much lately that even this so-called prophetic fulfillment will get old. Case in point, all the Sunday laws that have been passed in the last few years around the world. It's like no big deal now to some folks. So many deceived souls will get the implant. And how will this be a problem? Well, think about it this way. You're not a believer at this time in your life, okay? you walk into a doctor's office with your sickly child or your dog or even yourself is sick. You get the implant for your child or yourself or your dog, and then you're on your merry little way. A year, perhaps two, go by. You forget all about that very chip. Someone with prophetic understanding starts to share with you, using a Bible and a history book. You accept the message because if people have an opportunity to see the truth for what it is, they accept it. I mean, the natural reaction of folks is, I mean, they're not stupid. We have brains. We've been blessed. And you know now, not let's say now all of a sudden you know now what the real mark of the beast is and you're ready to avoid it. The time comes when you got to run and hide. Hide? Impossible. Little Johnny or Fido are now bleeping a homing signal back to the feds. Now, okay, a strange analogy to say the least, but still. That's really all I see this implant being a threat to. It's not the mark. It is, however, a method by which some will be tracked down by Roman Catholic United States government. And it won't be long before we see the military standing alongside Catholic priests and prelates. In fact, that photo of the cardinal, the Nazi, was snapped just a few months ago. So it's already common knowledge among the movers and shakers that Rome and the USA are walking hand in hand. In fact, their very power structure is questioned now. And they do this stuff years in advance. I was just talking to a friend of the ministry yesterday, and he used to be in the Marines. And he says back in the 80s, they were training their soldiers how to fight in Afghanistan or Iraq. In the 80s, folks. So, anyway, they're now questioning in the media who is the more powerful entity. And this has more or less become the popular question. I mean, the headline, listen to this. New book compares power of the White House and the Vatican. This is from Madrid, Spain, September 28th, Zenit News Service reporting. And Zenit is a Roman Catholic publication. You can get, they'll email you stuff. You get a subscription and it's boom, it's all free. It says, Rafael Navarro Valls, professor of Madrid's Complutense University and Secretary General of the Royal Spanish Academy of Jurisprudence and Legislation, has published a book entitled On Power and Glory. The book is a collection of essays that focus on different aspects of the presidency of the United States, where political power is manifested in a pure state, and of the spiritual authority representative by John Paul II. And you can get the whole article on my next newsletter if you want for free. I mean, just click it. But so, you know, from what I gleaned from that article, I didn't share the whole thing, of course. It appears the book discusses the thin red line between powers in Washington and powers in Rome. In the article, the author alludes to the positive aspects of the two so close in unison. They depict the USA as the earthly power and Rome as the spiritual power. Curiously, the author describes that thin red line by calling it red. Both powers are infamous for the deaths they have inflicted upon the innocent, so I don't see that line being very thick at all, but it's most assuredly red. With all that's going on in Washington, D.C., since the so-called surprise attacks on 9-1-1, we see our lives changing day by day. New laws, less freedoms, and better security is the American way. The sheeple of the USA are all for it if it ensures their safety. And they only assume they're safer because Washington says they are, with these new laws. A new world order is already here, and soon they will let everyone know that the real reason is to why they wanted all these controlling laws. Prophecy declares a one-world government is to be Antichrist's main desire, and that is exactly what Washington is setting up. And the Pope isn't hiding his complete acceptance with this idea. We have seen the headlines of the Pope calling for a new world order back in January of 2004. And just a couple of weeks ago, Mikhail Gorbachev, the former Soviet leader who helped end the Cold War at President Ronald Reagan's prodding, and as well as the Pope's help, is calling for a new world order based on strong adherence to international law. And who do you suppose has his eyes set on standing in the position of Secretary General of the United Nations? Or should I say, King of the World? Well, do you recall my newsletter back in April of 1999 entitled King Clinton? This man, called William Jefferson Clinton, is one popular man with the evil ones behind the scenes. They know he is open to anything they desire as long as he can stand as the big cheese. His arrival is perfect for the times, people. Many of you that know me know I have repeatedly stated I believe this man to be the end-time president. He doesn't have to be in office or even in the USA to do it, for that matter. I mean, look at the methods His methods of reenacting a slew of executive orders proves this. They're still in place. Obvious reality is the grand majority of peoples alive today are evil. And as is natural, they desire an evil man to rule them. Headline, The New World Disorder, Bill Clinton to run UN, is posted October 21st, 2004, WorldNetDaily.com did it. It's coming out of Washington. It says, Bill Clinton, as Secretary General of the United Nations, it has been talked about in the UN circles and among the former president insiders for more than 2 years, and now, according to the United Press International Report, Clinton definitely wants to do it. The term of Kofi Annan, the current United Nations Secretary General, ends in 2006, and according to the report, Clinton's candidacy would receive overwhelming support from the United Nations member states, particularly in the third world. He definitely wants to do it. You know, is this why he gave those military secrets to China? Think about it. Getting back, it says, he definitely wants to do it. A Clinton insider is quoted as saying, but Clinton faces an unusual predicament and potential obstacle in his quest. Can he get the support of the United States government to take on the assignment? United Nations boosters think Clinton as Secretary General would bolster the prestige of the world body. No American has ever been a UN Secretary General, even though the United States serves as the host country and the major contributor to its budget. Critics of the United Nations complain that it's an organization without the muscle and will to put its decisions into effect, a UN source told the UPI. There's a good chance that Clinton could significantly change that situation, and then we'll see if the critics mean what they say. This is not the first time Clinton's interest in the job has been raised. Back in February of 2003, I knew about this a lot. I don't know, man, I got stuff on this from a lot earlier than that. But anyway, it says back in February of 2003, there were reports of a major international move to engineer Clinton in the post. Those reports suggested that Clinton had already lined up support for his candidacy for the Secretary General position from Germany, France, England, Ireland, New Zealand, and a handful of African states, Morocco and Egypt. There were also suggestions that Annan might resign before the end of his term in 2006. And I did get an article about that, I don't know, about a week ago, and it turns out that's just a rumor, so who knows. But finishing up the article, it says Annan took over the UN chief in 1997. On the record, he has said he intends to fill out his entire term. Clinton's fundraising prowess is viewed in some quarters as a real incentive for the UN. So, are you aware that, those of you listening, that William Jefferson Clinton was trained and taught at Georgetown University? Why is that significant? Georgetown University is a Roman Catholic Jesuit-run university. With Clinton in pouncing position for the seat of all seats, and the Pope already being blessed with a permanent seat in United Nations meetings, he just got that recently. Is there any reason to use much gray matter to figure this one out? I mean, the Pope demands a new world order that has a respect of international order based on the goals of the United Nations. This same United Nations that has been peppering its comments over the years that peace can only be realized by a complete agreement or alliance with the Vatican. This is the same United Nations that is established in December of 2003 that men armed only with words can commit genocide. That means Bibles too, folks. Remember what's going on in Canada? If you talk to a homosexual using a Bible, you can get 5 years. I mean, is it any wonder this so-called Christian leader wants an international new world order that is based on the anti-Christian morals of the United Nations? You know, the Christian leader, of course, so-called, you know, Christian leader being the Pope. And is it any wonder Clinton is their man to ensure these demands are met? I mean, keep in mind, this is the same William Jefferson Clinton that spearheaded the attack on the women and children in Waco, Texas. The same Clinton that was impeached and defied that order and stayed in office regardless. The same Clinton that sold secrets of microtechnology to Red China to help them prevent their international ballistic missiles from falling out of the sky prematurely. The same Clinton that told a bold-faced lie on camera to the American people and got away with it. Like I said earlier, evil nations seek evil leaders. So, why the United Nations, you ask? It's not a one-world government spoken of in the prophetic world word? Well, yes, it is. All the pieces are flowing smoothly into place. All one needs to do now is watch how the Vatican has been directing traffic in the European Union. No more passports, no more money exchanges, no more Christianity, in fact. Unless, of course, it's designed by Roman dogma. Catholicism is legal. That's about it. It's working. I mean, the United, the European Union, their economy is growing. The euro dollar. The people are falling for the same lies as always, and peace and safety is spoken on every tongue. So what's next? Well, do you recall the comments in the past that states the only plausible next move would be to have a North American continent emulate, you know, Europe? That way, all the insane laws that are passed in Canada that don't fly here in the States will become law in this land, and vice versa. Is that possible? Is it a pipe dream, or is it already here? Headline, NAFTA Plus talks aim for security pact. Continental Customs, Energy, Immigration Policies on Agenda of Group co-chaired by Manley. Roberta File reporting, October 16, 2004, from Ottawa. This is from the Can West News Service on Saturday, October 16. It says this, senior businesses and political leaders from Canada, United States, and Mexico are joining forces to establish a blueprint for a powerhouse North American trading bloc to take on the world, shielded by a fortress American-style defense perimeter. The tri-national task force, which has the full backing of the three governments already, has been charged with creating a roadmap toward a continent-wide customs-free zone with a common approach to trade, energy, immigration, law enforcement, and security that would virtually emulate existing national eliminate existing national borders. Dismantling the borders would require increased cooperation with law enforcement in Canada, United States, and Mexico, and similar policies on travel, visas, immigration, and refugees. The idea of a NAFTA Plus perimeter, including a Continental Energy Pact, was first proposed by Paul Soluzzi, United States Ambassador several years ago. While Mr. Soluzzi said the United States had no interest in a comprehensive European-style or a European Union-style economic and political union, he said steps need to be taken to make it easier for the free flow of commerce and people in North America. The report is scheduled to be released next summer. Those of us that have been watching the activity on the borders of our country know how things have become rather laxed lately. Borders have been opened in many areas that were once patrolled. Laws have already been passed in the states to allow illegal aliens full government benefits, which include welfare, hospitalization, and even prescription drugs. They've been testing the waters right before our eyes for years, and no one says anything. No, except for truth, you know, FirstAmendmentRadio.com. No matter those of us that understand, it really doesn't matter. If you understand prophecy, you know it's inevitable anyway. So, but what about those that don't study prophecy? I mean, what better time than now to start? Or will you prefer to wait until they say, "Where's your papers?" Headline, Acton, your passport, please. This is from newswithviews.com, October 14th, 2004. It says, does an article in the New York Times on 10-11-04 entitled Congress Close to Establishing Rules for Driver's Licenses by Matthew L. Wald have anything to do with the Bush administration's hiring of ex-KGB chiefs Primakov, also former president of Russia and close associate of Saddam Hussein, and Karpov to work in the government's Office of Information Awareness, which is DARPA, to help in designing an international passport? A national ID card is back on the table. The same one they discussed with your fingerprint or DNA profile in it. Do you recall the 911 commission and they were how they accepted the report? Their report was accepted. That spoke of the necessity of a national ID card. They also spoke of the need for a larger screening network to be set up in the country. This will allow the federal government to monitor the movements and transactions of every single solitary American citizen. History shows that governments predictably use power of this sort to monitor the actions of people in damaging ways. The ridiculous claims that the government ID cards will actually protect our privacy certainly don't appear to hold any water now, do they? I mean, just look at history. Life is about to change very drastically, and mark my words, something very drastic has to occur once again so as to assure the pieces can be easily put in place. You know, before 9-1-1, certain laws were impossible. The American people rejected them boldly, but now that fear has been manufactured and packaged so graphically, we now have laws that only a post-911 society would embrace. So what will they do next? Time will tell. One thing's for sure, Rome will have its image here in the USA before long. In fact, as we watch Bush preach and Pat Robertson politicize, it's already here. Headline: website blur lines, or websites blur lines between church and state. Religious groups call for members to pray for political purposes. This is out of Knight Rider News Service. It says this: Nancy O'Brien said she'd never seen anything like it in her 60 years as a Roman Catholic. There in the church bulletin of St. Philip Neri's in Lafayette Hill, Pennsylvania, was an item urging parishioners to pray the election novena, available at electionnovena.org. To O'Brien, an active member of her parish, encouraging such prayer in the church bulletin was clearly political, crossing a line that separates church and state. Remember when a Baptist church said something similar to that on their pulpit, and a bunch of Catholics got together and wanted to get their 501c3 moved? I got it on my current events, my urgent breaking news page. Just happened about a month or so ago. Anyway, getting back, it says, the federal tax code prohibits religious leaders from endorsing candidates from the pulpit, the theory being that organizations don't have to pay taxes shouldn't influence elections. In July of 2003, televangelist Pat Robertson kicked up a stir when his website at CBN.com invited prayers for three Supreme Court justices, prayers that God will inspire them to retire. A year later, Justices John Paul Stevens, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Sandra Day O'Connor are still there. Now here's a switch. This article, a Catholic complaining about mixing church and state. I know it sounds oxymoronic, but I just don't get it. But I mean, complain all you like, Nancy. Your church has the agenda that no one can stop. You know, Nancy needs to investigate this. Pray for her. And Pat Robertson is right there with the beast. He has done more damage to the wall of separation of church and state than any non-Catholic man alive. Still, those of us that study prophecy understood this years ago. The image of the beast in Rome must be created. Back in October of 2002, I reported on how Pat Robertson and his Catholic friends were doing just that with that Christian coalition meeting that they had with 5,000 politicians. The Vatican is a church and state at the same time. Prophecy says they will create an image to the beast that has had the wound by the sword. The Vatican received that wound in 1798 by Napoleon. And now the churches of America are seeking a political and religious form of government just like Rome. It's a church and state. And Rome's mark is Sunday worship. Strangely enough, just like Rome, all those that call themselves Protestants seek Sunday laws as well now. How many shops have you gone by where the Protestant folks have signs? Oh, we're closed on Sunday for worship. And by the way, to ensure all those that may enter into this land of the free and home of the brave are kept in the dark regarding all the strange goings-on, Canada has laws that will soon be valid here that prevent Bibles from being given to newcomers. After the North American continent becomes one nation, as we see the European continent, laws in Canada will apply here as well. Headline: government bans Bibles for newcomers. This is from, where did I get this from? National Post. Heather Sokoloff reporting, July 17th, 2004. She says, Phyllis Nesbitt, director of the Canadian Bible Society, is accusing Ottawa of curtailing freedom of religion. They have to end their 50-year tradition of offering New Testament Bibles to new citizens at their ceremonies. Expect it, folks. It's coming in your lifetime. No, I'm not setting any dates. Well, it looks like we're out of time, so thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks go out to FirstAmendmentRadio.com for letting the truth be broadcast so freely. Stop by the website, www.remnantofgod.org. Also stop by SDRvoice.org to get a chance. For listening, everybody. See you next time. God bless.